The Catholic faith is steeped in ritual and tradition, and its religious leaders are often forced to confront the conflict between maintaining tradition and embracing innovation. Kathleen Henry's novel, Critical Mass, explores the tension between these two forces through the eyes of a diverse array of characters spanning the course of a century. The novel is composed of a series of interwoven vignettes that delve deeply into each character's psyche and exposes the realities of living under such a weighty religious tradition. Kathleen Henry joins us today to talk about her novel and her own experiences of balancing tradition and innovation. As a community-ordained priest, she joins us from our studio in Eastham. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
So let's talk about the structure of the novel and how it mirrors that of a Catholic Mass. What inspired you to do it that way?
The Catholic Mass, actually. It was back in 1976. I was at a Mass. It was a significant one for me that particular day. And something about it just dawned on me that the form itself, with the sacred extracted, let's say, but just the form, was really beautiful and dramatic, theatrical. And what a wonderful structure it would be for connected short stories. Mm. So it's the idea started way back then.
Right. So
for me.
And you don't really need to be Catholic to really enjoy the story.
No, because the structure itself is dramatic, like a play. The Mass is set up so that you build to a climax, and then there's the denouement, if you remember that from your school days. And that's we build to a crisis, the people in the audience, a sense of climax, and then we feel washed and refreshed afterwards. And that's what we see in great plays and great novels, kind of thing. And so it was that structure that I wanted to emulate in book form.
So as you're saying, many of the novel's scenes are written like a play with a script and stage directions. What inspired you to use this style? What role do these scenes play?
There's an ironic tone that I wanted to express, and it just came out in character form. So this the character is Smoking Woman, and it means, yes, she's sitting there smoking her cigarette and being very sophisticated and blasé, and has this very ironic take on everything that has to do with the church. But she's also smoking mad. And so there's something about that that said she's really outside of the story. She's an observer. And I thought, well, I don't even think it was thinking. She just became this character on the stage, speaking directly to the audience. And I just put her in that way into the book.
In the author's note, you say, read no further if a pious and orthodox piece on the Mass is what you think this is. If you're one of the gentle, angry people, however, read on. What do you mean by gentle, angry people?
Well, it's a reference to Holly Near's song, We Are a Gentle, Angry People, and that it's possible to have a love-hate relationship with the Catholic Church. I think my generation in particular knows what I mean, that there's something familiar and sustaining in the rituals and in the creed itself, in the belief system. And at the same time, there's so much wrong, so much tragedy and sadness and fundamental injustice that there's no response except anger, actually, in my opinion.
So how do faith and defiance coexist?
That's a wonderful question. I think for some people, they're so antithetical they cannot coexist at all. It's the person who would say, well, you can't be a cafeteria Catholic, you know, that would not be able to understand that both of those things very much exist. But I think the model for it actually is the story in the New Testament of Jesus angry in the temple, that there's a deep faith and belief and yet defiance in the character of Jesus, the historical figure that we know, his being able to call the Pharisees out for what they really were was really a sign of his sustaining faith in what was right and good in the Jewish tradition of the time. So for me, faith and defiance are necessarily combined, that in order to keep the faith, you must fight for it.
Right. So how do you think the church should go about balancing tradition and innovation?
Well, when you talk about who knows what we mean when we say the church, really, anyway, and if we're talking about the Vatican and that bureaucracy, then I almost don't know how to respond. I think that if we go back to the very earliest days when church was small groups of people who came together to pray in their own homes, or when they were being chased and persecuted in the catacombs, hidden away, that those, that small group was as fundamental and true as can be, and yet always innovating, that the liturgies that grew out of their experience were exactly that. They were expressions of what they were living. Mm. And we've gotten 2,000 years away from that, so that everything now is carved in stone. And the innovation that we saw when John the 23rd threw open the windows and called for Vatican II and all of that, that seems light years away now.
Your novel looks critically at the role of women in the Catholic Church. How have women's roles changed over time? Have they? And what do you see as the next step?
Early in the church, women were as more equal than the women in the society around them. And that's what we lose sight of, I think. That's what the current church, quote-unquote, fathers lose sight of, that women were deacons. We know that from the scripture itself. We have much scholarship to the fact that women were priests in the way that priesthood was defined back then. There's even scholarship that there was a woman bishop in the early centuries of the church. So how have things changed?
Quite a bit.
Yes. It wasn't until, oh, I think it's the 11th century or the 12th century that priests, that the male priesthood was needed to be celibate, that that became a tradition, celibacy as a tradition. We lose sight of that now. It seems that celibacy was somehow, and male priesthood was somehow given an imprimatur by Jesus Christ himself 2,000 years ago. That couldn't be further from the truth. All of those added on trappings came hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later. So the women in the church went have gone through 1,500 years worth of a loss of their standing in worship and leadership.
Now, you are a community ordained priest. What was the experience of going through that process like for you?
It's what I described, actually, in terms of the earliest church groupings. It's similar to that, in that the group that I pray and worship with, this is back in the early 90s now, called me forth to be their liturgy maker and the leader of liturgy and the minister to this group. And they ordained me. And that is probably what happened in the early church, that the house churches, let's say, that gathered, called forth the one among them who seemed to be the leader to do this or the creative person to do this, and blessed them, ordained them.
So what repercussions, if any, have you experienced?
Well, let's be real clear that there's nothing about this ordination that the Roman Catholic Church in Rome itself would recognize, I'm not a priest in any way that the Catholic Church would recognize, but I am the leader of this small group of people that comes together to worship. And I marry people and minister to people in many ways, but this is not this is an innovation, let's say. This is not part of the tradition.
Right. And of course, this has been controversial for quite a time now, but there's this movement for the ordination of female priests. And how big and powerful do you think that movement? Do you see that coming somewhere down the line?
Actually, I don't see it coming in my lifetime. Hmm. I don't. I think that we will see married priests before we see women priests in the traditional Roman Catholic Church. The Women's Ordination Conference is the name of the group that you're mentioning, and they've been around for over 30 years, I would say. And there's also another group which is called Women Church Convergence. And both of those groups and many others within the traditional Catholic Church, I'm using that word traditional in a funny way, but in what would be recognized as the Catholic Church, have worked for women's ordination. And for many years, I stood out in front of the cathedral in Boston, Massachusetts, with my sign, Ordain Women, on the day of ordination for the St. John's Seminarians. But that movement waxes and wanes, I would say, because women who want ordination in a church that is renewed. And until that happens, there is a hesitation about becoming too close to the structure itself.
Let's talk about your novel again for a moment. We look at the lives of Molly Donahue around 1910, Anne O'Brien, 1955, Christine Roy, 1988, and M.J. O'Brien, 2000. Now, we look at these women and their struggles. They're fictional characters, of course, but are they based in real experience? What led you? How did you create these characters?
The first thing that came to me was the door of the cathedral itself, the door of the church. And the idea was, how many hands have reached for that handle on that door and opened that door? And it was from that little idea that I thought I could tell the story from the perspective of several women, each of whom has had a different experience opening that door. In terms of the storylines themselves, many of the stories in here are my own, are things that I lived through in my many years of parochial school and parish life.
So how has the novel been received?
Well, it's all around the country, slowly but surely. Because it's a different kind of form, it's poetic in places, it's sad in places, and funny. I think it's funny, too, in places. It's true that people don't know quite how to take it. And I think my warning at the beginning that if you're looking for a pious treatise, this is read no further, mm-hmm. Is a good warning. And another warning might be, too, this reads in a very, I think it's a very lively way. It's very mm-hmm. alive. It doesn't have a beginning, middle, and end in a simple way. Mm. So it's a challenge in a way.
Well, and I'm wondering I'm thinking obviously this is intentional because we do, as you mentioned, that when we talked at the very beginning of the show, there's this balance, this tension between the forces of tradition and innovation. And there are a lot of people struggling within the Catholic faith. So your book opens up a storyline for them to have a conversation with themselves about their own feelings for the church. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes, that's very right.
What do you imagine the church will be like 200 years from now?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Well, 200 years from now, I think the church will be, if it's still alive, and I think it will be, discreet. I think it will return to the small, a sense of community that a local parish can give, that the universality of the Catholic Church that has been trumpeted for centuries, that this one huge monolithic church, that's not what the Jesus had in mind, but rather that small groups of people loving each other and creating peace among each other, that's how his message would grow and embrace the earth. And I think that if the Catholic Church is going to make it, that's smaller is better.
Mm. So what do you say to those people who are struggling with their faith?
That what the truest message is love each other as you would love yourself, and as you, the golden rule, that's what the kernel of the message is. That encompasses then taking deep care of justice and deep care of suffering, and that is what the Jesus, the Christ, was all about.
Kathleen Henry, her book is Critical Mass. Kathleen, thanks for joining us this morning.
I really appreciate talking with you, Mindy, and thank you for reading the book.
Thanks to Brian Morris for production assistance in Eastham, where Kathleen Henry joined us this morning. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.